Welcome to another edition of Mormon Expression. What you're about to listen to is our special edition of the recording of our August 6, 2010 live social that we held in the Salt Lake City at the Crimson Room at the University of Utah. Just as a few notes and disclaimers, this recording that you're about to listen to was a backup version. It came directly from my voice recorder. For those of you that were at the social, you knew that we had some technical difficulties with our audio equipment, and we were unable to salvage our master recordings, so we had to go with our secondary backup, which is this. So the quality isn't great, but it's still doable. Apologize in advance for the quality, and some of the sounds and voices will be a little bit soft, but this is the best we got. So, well, let's go ahead and get started, and I hope you guys enjoy the recording.
Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. Normally, I do this alone in the dark, so I'm not used to an audience, so I'm going to be a little shy. Thank you. All right, let's see. So first of all, let's go ahead and introduce our panel.
We have some sort of, I don't know. What do they call it? We have like a dinner that, or something, or a social where we do the fundraiser. Can you get it to come?
Hey, Zilpa.
Hey, John.
Where are you going to be on August 6, 2010?
Hopefully with you.
That's right.
Maybe with some other friends.
That's right, because August 6, 2010 is the Mormon Expression Live podcast recording.
Oh, right.
All right, nice.
Dear Mormon Expression, I hate all this online bullshit. Is there a way to actually meet people and talk to real people, you know, in real life? Well, Mormon Expression is also holding our first annual live podcast reception.
Remember those awesome promos that John and Zilpa did for the Mormon Expression live broadcast on Friday, August 6th? Doors opening at 6:30 and the live recording starting at 7. And remember when John and Zilpa said, if you ain't got no dough, but you still need to reserve your tickets in advance? Yeah. And remember when Tom was reading fake emails and he said a bad word and he... That was awesome.
Mormon Expression reception and live broadcast will be on August 6th.
All right. Are we ready? You guys finally got your shit together. We can start now. We'll do this like Elder's Quorum. Go around the room and everybody can read a verse. So I'll start.
This is the Mormon Expression podcast. Find us on the web at mormonexpression.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. If anything, my continual participation on online communities and things like Mormon Expression is because of that loneliness and isolation that I've felt, that if there's any way we can help others through it, not saying to end up on one side or the other, but just to get through that long, dark night of the soul, that's what I'm interested in. Sitting at my side is the lovely Zilpa.
Hello. Oh, yeah, and I also asked you your opinion about John. And you said he's not my side. But he seems like a nice guy.
First, let's introduce the panel. We'll move from left to right. Starting on the left side, we have Niall.
Hello, everyone. Did you bring me up for the freak factor then?
Yeah.
That's a good thing, though.
I guess for you guys.
Moving a little bit to the right, but not much. They're kind of competing for the far left. We have Jim.
And gentlemen.
There was this kind of almost a end times masturbatory effort Did you say masturbatory?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. Coming down towards the middle, we have George.
Hi, everyone. Okay. Yeah, we're sitting here in a podcast, sitting there going, yeah, I was wearing shorts that were 3 inches too short, you know, and what that means. And that's just weird.
Moving out to the right side, we have Tom.
Hey, what's up, guys?
If you remember, this was before the veil, and this is why you don't remember.
And anchoring in the far extreme right, we have Mike.
Hello.
Just one thing, you gotta promise me you're gonna try to stop calling my guests to repentance.
Isn't that part of my job as a priesthood holder?
And then we have the lovely Bridget.
Hello.
We get turned down by more women than we do men.
Have you tried buying them dinner first?
Then we have Glenn.
Hey, this is Glenn.
Hey, Glenn, how do you maintain faith without knowing all the things that John knows?
I redefine faith. You know, faith for me is just kind of like a hope to keep peace in my house. How's that?
In the house.
And I think we need to recognize that just because they have left the church does not mean they are to be feared and loathed and assumed that they have, you know, some terrible social disease or something.
Oof. There you go. All right, well, that's sort of a year in retrospective. So here we are live. First of all, to my left... She normally sits to my left when we record, but now she's at the right side, where she thinks she belongs. Is Zilpha, of course. My wife, we just celebrated our 14th anniversary a couple weeks ago. If you listen way back, you know that we married about 4 months after we met. So 14 is both our, you know, our meeting and our anniversary. So there's Zilpha in the flesh. And then to her right, in the shadow of the everlasting hills, of course, is Tom, who comes from Utah County. Hey, Tom. Some may think that Mike is the villain of the podcast, but the real villain is Jim, sitting there in the middle. Banned on at least 13 discussion boards, and here he is in the flesh. All right, well, and then we have the curiosity of the Mormon world and the star of her own soon-to-be PBS documentary, Bridget.
Hello, guys.
Glenn is the man who likes to get things done. If Emmy was home teaching, he'd be coming in with 100%. He was in Japan when he started with us, and now he's in the equally exotic Indiana. There's Glenn. Just to prove I'm not making him up. It's the one and only mine. Stay on. Reached out to me about 4 or 5 podcasts in and said you wanted to come on, right?
Yes.
I have never met another Mormon like Mike. So he is genuine, he is sincere, he's one of the nicest guys. But man, oh man. And then there's two, of course, who couldn't be here. Niall, the Scourge of Scandinavia, is in Scandinavia right now. George, the former seminary teacher, is out on the West Coast. Family stuff, so he couldn't be there, but most of the panel was able to come in from far and wide, so we're happy to see them. Our first order of business is to announce the winner of the essay contest. Did y'all listen to the essays? You don't have to answer. You can pretend you did. The winning essay was the second to last essay on the second episode by a friend of mine named Alan. I didn't vote, I'll say, but his was the one on the beach. He talked about the beach and the surf and all that coming in. Shifting sands. So he's our winner, and he's going to get his $100. So. All right, we're not going to interview anybody tonight, but we're going to start out with a little game. We're going to play some trivia. If I call your name, you're going to come up to the board. We're going to start here. space. Gina?
10 degrees left.
Is it Schneider?
Come on.
Come on up. Brian Jolly.
You don't get that machine. Try to do some of the hottest birds to back you set for her. We don't try to smoke out. Get your machine. You know me well. Tonight being something on me sell. My only hell was this when y'all niggas know this bell. Folks, kill my niggas.
All right. So, if you listen to any of the apostates and all their exit stories, we call them apostamonies. They claim they spend lots of time studying the church, right? And if you still go to church, then you actually do, supposedly. So we're going to test that out, right? So I have, Mark, right here, my kind of hard Mormon trivia.
Kind of hard.
All right. So it's standard, buzz it in. All right. And then fabulous prizes for the winner. So, first question. On what day are we to shop, brush, shine, and shampoo?
Saturday
is right. Okay.
Is that the only day we're supposed to do that, John?
Yes. All right. In what year was the endowment for the dead first practiced? Anybody know?
75.
Close. 1877. All right. How many temples did Joseph Smith intend to build in Independence? Nope. That's my next
one.
No.
One
character
priesthood.
You're getting closer.
Two.
Anybody know?
12.
12.
70. I thought it was 24. Are you thinking this up? The question from the Common Research, so. All right. So we'll go back to easy. We need to reset that. All right. Who is the most recent member of the Quorum of the Twelve? Nope. The what? I don't think there's a black gentleman in this room. Baby steps. It's Neil Anderson. Okay. This one is written by Zilpha. So, in 1859. This seating arrangement was instituted by Brigham Young in all Mormon congregations.
Women closer to the stove? Men on the left, women on the right?
That's close enough. It was women on the north, men on the south, and children on the benches in the front. I don't know if they weren't oriented by the compass, what happened?
Honestly, it didn't last very long.
It lasted for about 20 years. Who was the last president of the church to have practiced living polygamy?
John Taylor. Nope.
Not John Taylor. By living polygamy, I mean that he actually married two women and that were both alive at the same time.
Joseph
Jeff?
Heber
J. Grant.
Somebody had it back. Heber J. Grant. Died 1945. I did have an honor. Thanks, Perry. Okay. We'll go easy again. What is the lesser light that rules the night?
The moon.
The moon. Read the verse, I'm assuming you read the next sentence. What is the name of the moon?
Jupiter.
according to the Pearl Gray Prize.
Wait your lamp.
Devin,
you know? It's Olia.
Olia, right. All right. Let's keep going.
Watch your heads. I'm throwing this to Derek.
All right. Who was the last known president of the church to be anointed king of the world?
Joseph Smith. Right?
No.
Unfortunately, no.
Bring me up.
No, you keep going.
John Taylor.
Brigham Young's 55 known marriages, let's be clear. How many were to women who were clearly still married to another man?
Nine?
Upside down, six. Only six, that's not that bad.
There were six others that it was unclear as to the marriage status at the time.
There's nothing wrong with polyandry, I would just like to say that.
All right, this one's for Paul. According to the Pearl Great Prize, in fact, facsimile number 3, above the hand of the king's principal waiters, what is written in Egyptian?
It was actually written in Egyptian.
According to the Pearl Great Prize, what is written above the hand of the king's principal waiter? It's in footnote 5.
The guy's name? It's like Shem or something.
That's close enough. It's Shua. Okay, follow-up question. What does it actually say?
It's one of the Egyptian. So there's Osiris. And it's a king pharaoh, it's a king pharaoh, and another one of the. So Osiris and. Let's say Ra.
You're on the right path. It says Osiris Hor, who is true of word throughout all eternity. Shulam, Osiris Hor. Okay. According to a church news headline, 1962, what popular dance was banned by the MIA?
Was it the waltz?
Not the waltz. 1962. Oh, sorry.
The twist,
Your Honor! All right.
1862, Brigham Young's The Waltz was,
Follow-up question. Any other dance from 1962?
Okay, let's get to it again. All right, after being chased out of Independence, of course, the Mormons settled a city called Far West. According to Joseph Smith, what ancient historical event had taken place on the very ground where they settled Far West?
Self died.
Not self. No. Far West.
Noah launched his ark.
No. That was in Adam on Diamond. Okay. Oh, what is it?
Was it Cain slew Abel?
Cain slew Abel, that's right. All right. Okay, here's one, and get this right, you take whatever it is. All right. Of the 72 general authorities of the church who were in polygamous relationships, 72 of them. I won't go there. How many of them were involved in marital breakups?
Up to the odds, isn't it?
72. How many of them were in marital breakups? All right, you guys clearly don't know. All right, there were 55 divorces, 26 separations, and one annulment.
How many marriages?
Out of 39. So some of them doubled up on the divorces. So 39. 39 breakups, 55 divorces, 26 separations. All right. A hymn. According to the hymn, praise to the man, what must the earth do? I pulled this out of the green book. All right, who knows? Atone for the blood of that man. Yes, 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 yes. All right. Just a couple more. Of the 361 pioneer companies that came to Salt Lake, official pioneer companies before 1869, 361 of them, how many of them were handcart companies?
As opposed to wagons?
Right, right. The rest would have been wagons.
I don't know. 200.
200? No, it was 10. 10 of them. All right. All right, here's our last question. Okay, when primary president Michelina, is it Michelina? P. Grassley spoke in general conference on October 2nd, 1988. How many years had it been since a woman spoke in general conference? She broke a span.
All of them. It was
133 years that women have been allowed to speak in conference.
All right. The same year that they had the first women's session, just for women, so 1978.
Yeah, so before 1978, there was no women's session. And before 1978, women weren't allowed to pray in churches either, so.
Exactly.
All right, what's their prize? Did I keep score? Did you keep score?
We all are.
These are specially flavored Kit Kats that I brought back with me from Japan. They're against the word of wisdom. One is a coffee flavored Kit Kat, and the other one's green tea.
All right, thanks, guys. All right, we're gonna do our next little contest. First, while we're waiting for that, I gotta ask this question, or else people have to actually answer. How many of you have been to church in the last 3 months? All right, about half. That's what I expect. Good. Congratulations. All right, so we're going to do our next game, our next little game here. I don't know if you ever listened to the NPR news quiz show.
Wait, don't tell me.
We're going to play Bluff the Listener. All right? So what we're going to do is we're going to read you three stories from church history. One of them is true, two of them are false. We made them up. So whoever gets up here, your job is to guess which one is true. All right.
It has to all be true, because there could be bits of truth. It has to all be true.
All right. Kent. Come on up, Kent. Stories have something to do with the Nauvoo Temple. Alright, so something happened at the Nauvoo, you've heard of the Nauvoo Temple, right? Okay. And something happened at the Nauvoo Temple, and the illustrious panel is going to read you three stories. Your only job is to guess which one is false. Which one's true? Yeah, thank you.
Okay. In the spring of 1846, a meeting was held in the Nauvoo Temple. Brigham Young was the speaker. The room was so crowded with people that the weight of them caused the new floor to suddenly start to settle. There was a loud cracking noise that created quite a commotion among the congregation. Two apostates who happened to be in the crowd jumped out of the newly installed windows and got cut up from the blast. Other people ran out through the doors. A large portion of the congregation remained in the room and began to jump up and down with all their might, yelling, "Oh, oh, oh," in an attempt to get the floor to complete its settlement. Brigham Young promptly adjourned the meeting to a nearby grove, and when the congregation was gathered there, he said that now they could jump up and down as much as they pleased.
Okay, jumping up and down on the floor. Who's got the next one?
Okay. The original design for the Nauvoo Temple included 12 Doric marble columns, a balustrade parapet, and other features from the Palladian and neoclassical styles of architecture. Joseph Smith took one look at the plans and said, "It looks too much like a Parliament House. If we build this monstrosity, the men will strut around in their best cotton tabs and barrister robes. We will never get any of the women out or any of the spirit in."
All right, women out, spirit in. Who's got the next one?
The very first angel placed on the Mormon temple was on the Nauvoo temple. The angel was in a horizontal, flying position and was actually a working weather vane. After the Nauvoo temple was destroyed, many of the significant remnants were salvaged by local church members, but the angel was never recovered. Some 20 years after the destruction of the temple, a certain weather vane angel was purchased by St. John's Protestant Church in Cincinnati. It was placed on top of their building. The Cincinnati Church did not know anything about the origins of their angel, until just a few years ago, when amateur LDS historian Stephen Richards noted its striking resemblance to the one from the Nauvoo Temple. After careful study, he stated that he was sure, quote, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that it was, in fact, the original Nauvoo weather vane. However, many at St. John's remained unconvinced. According to Pastor Sam Dillon, quote, "We have no intention of selling or gifting our angel to the Mormon Church. While we acknowledge that it appears to be very similar to the one that was on the temple, we feel strongly that it's not the same angel and it should remain where it is."
Okay, Ken. You have the rambunctious crowd with the oh on the floor. You have the temple's original neoclassic architectural design that will never get the women out or any of the spirit in. Or the weather vane that is now on top of St. John's in Cincinnati.
I don't know, they tell me true, I'll be false, but I'll go with the second one.
The second one. All right, Ed, which one was it?
It is the jumping on the floor to settle it.
Jumping on the floor to settle was the true story. All right. Sorry, Ken, you lost.
What are you saying?
All right, hold on, we're going to check our sound equipment here for a second.
Didn't like Lincoln and Jefferson and George Washington all appear in the St. George Temple?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Lincoln didn't.
Yes.
He didn't like what he read.
All right, I think we're back online. We were able to save the first half of the show, so that's a, was a key thing. All right, let's go ahead with our second. I got my little names. Oh, I'll mix up. Do you want to give me some more? What do you want to have that yet? Okay. All right, Mike Foster.
Yes.
Come on up, Mike. Okay. Now, of course, Orson Pratt was a key theologian in the early days of the church, and he wrote a book called The Seer, required reading in seminary today, I'm sure. He justified polygamy in the book The Seer. One of these statements was taken from his book The Seer to justify polygamy. The other two were made up, so listen in and see if you can figure it out. You guys need to get close to your minds, too.
Abraham practiced polygamy to fulfill God's covenant to him that he would be father to all nations. We will next show that the Supreme Father of Heaven promised Abraham to become both father to all nations of the earth through the new and everlasting covenant of eternal marriage. First to Sarai, mother of God's chosen people. Second to Hagar, mother of the heathen nations. And third to Keturah, support and comfort to Abraham in his toils. The seed of the first to rule upon thrones of the suns, the second to rule upon moons, and the third among the stars.
There you go. God's covenant to all nations. The next one.
King Henry VIII practiced polygamy. We will next show that the supreme head and founder of the Church of England, Henry VIII, was a polygamist. This king, having been married for upwards of 20 years to Catherine of Aragon, became deeply in love with Anne Boleyn. And in the year 1532, he was privately married to her while Catherine remained his lawful wife. This second marriage was celebrated in secret for fear of public scandal, for it should be remembered that through the delusive influence of the Roman Church, most of the people had been conditioned to believe that polygamy was unchristian. Hence it became, in their estimation, scandalous. And those who believed the contrary and wished to practice this divine institution were under the painful necessity of keeping their marriage contracts with their second wives partially secret.
Okay, Orson Pratt and King Henry. And the third one.
Poor guy.
Was it not the case that the Lord guided General Washington, our first founding father, into the comforting arms of Mary Gibbons, much to the anger and dismay of her espoused Mr. Clayford? And did not Thomas Jefferson repeat the actions of Ham with his own bonded Egyptus? And what of Benjamin Franklin, many common law wives, in the land still under yoke of the Romish Church? For was it not Mrs. Franklin who stated, "All mares look the same in a dark barn"? Mr. Our founding fathers understood and practiced a portion of this great eternal truth.
Okay, Brother Pratt justified the practice of polygamy. Was it to fulfill Abraham's covenant with the moon and the stars and all that? Move on. Was it that King Henry himself took other wives, therefore proving the principle that it was acceptable? Or was it the founding fathers and had their own dalliances which proved that it was okay? Which one did Orson Pratt actually write? Second.
King Henry VIII.
Correct. One here. Joseph Smith wrote a lot about geography. Oh, we need a contestant. Yeah, man. The contestant is the one and only John DeLynn. Okay. Joseph Smith wrote a lot about geography and had a lot of things to say. We're going to read three statements that may or may not have been written by Joseph Smith.
All right. In 1843, Lyman White noted in his journal an instance when Joseph Smith made an obscure prophecy concerning Texas. Joseph called the Council of 50 together to discuss the possibility of resettling the saints there. He declared, "In not many years hence, the land of Texas will become a new nation unto God. There the saints of the Lord will see hidden treasures like black gold springing forth from the earth." There the church shall be protected from the lies and persecutions of sinners and apostates. The prophet then organized a small company of elders to locate tracts of land available for purchase in Texas. According to Wright, all of this was done in secret so as to not excite the saints into moving before the proper time. After the martyrdom of the prophet, Brigham Young promptly abandoned the Texas plans in favor of relocating the church to Salt Lake Basin.
Okay, so treasures hidden in Texas. What's our next story?
In a discussion with Brother Homer Brown, Joseph Smith explained that the British Isles had once been connected to the European continent, but had been separated to protect the blood of Israel, specifically those of the tribe of Ephraim. What you know as the English Channel was once dry land, explained the prophet, but when the lost tribes crossed over on their journey to the North Countries, the Lord caused the ocean to cover their tracks behind them. That is why today you see so much of the blood of Ephraim coming out of England.
Okay. There's a lot of Ephraim in the English Isles. All right, our last paragraph.
There have been many who have speculated as to what created the Gulf of Mexico. Some scientists believe that the Gulf was formed when the North American plate began to separate from the African plate in the Jurassic times. Michael Stanton, a well-known geologist, has speculated that the Gulf may have been created from an impact event, like from a meteor or a comet. But one of the most interesting theories came from the prophet Joseph Smith. He claimed that the body of water that is currently known as the Gulf of Mexico is where the city of was located before it was taken up and translated. And if you look at the map, it does appear like something is missing where the Gulf of Mexico is currently.
Okay, John, you're a smart advance. Is it the treasures laid up in the great state of Texas, the English Channel, where the 10 tribes took their journeys, or the city of Enoch, or as everybody else says, Enoch, which was in the Gulf of Mexico?
I actually thought both Texas and Enoch were true. So
I thought they were all three true.
as a citizen of Texas, formerly I'm not to go to Texas, but it could be
Texas with the black. But what's the right answer?
How's the Gulf of Mexico, city of Enoch or Nina?
The Gulf of Mexico, all right. There you go.
Joseph Smith did want to move the Saints to Texas, but he never said anything about black gold spring out. And they were being protected.
Yeah, that was pretty strange. All right, so there's our games we play. Now, if you listen to the podcast, we probably do a little better when we go off script. So the rest of the evening, we just want to kind of open it up to you all for any sort of question that you have for the panel or a question on any particular matter in particular. So we only have the four mics. You can come up here, and I'm gonna give you this mic so it can get captured for posterity's sake. But we just really want to open it up and have the kind of discussion that we enjoy. So who's first?
I have a question for my head. Is there anything in the church doctrine this year that you don't believe?
Is there anything in the church history I don't believe?
Or doctrine that you don't believe?
No.
Wait, there's no thing that you believe or there's no thing that you don't believe?
No.
What don't you believe, Ryan?
Yeah, well, maybe I've heard the question wrong.
You believe it all?
Yeah, I believe it all.
Everything?
Yeah.
All right.
City of Enoch thing?
Oh, that one you just read? I don't know. Where did you get that quote?
From the diary of Woodrow. Okay, I remember. That's a good source.
All right, there you go, Mark. Let's go.
Okay, this question really is for Bridget. And having been at BYU for a while myself, I think you've commented about it, but could you say something about how you were able to stay there until the completion of a degree?
Well, it helps that when I first went to BYU, I was a little more uptight than I am now. when I first went to BYU, I didn't even watch PG-13 rated movies. I wouldn't watch anything above PG. BYU cured me of that. I was watching rated R movies and swearing a lot more by the end of it. But part of the reason I was able to stay at BYU like I did was because I honestly felt like God wanted me there. There was a religious reason. I felt that I had a calling and a sense of purpose, and that God wanted me to be in the pastor of the Latter-day Saints. I believe that. The other reason is because I genuinely do like Mormons. I am fascinated by LDS culture, history, and theology. I really am kind of... Evangelicals often say, I love Mormons, but I don't love Mormonism. I don't like that. I do love Mormonism, and I don't love Mormons. I'm just sleeping with Mormons.
Richard, did you convert anyone when you were at BYU?
That is a tricky question. I wouldn't say that I personally let anyone out of the church all by myself. I did know people who left, and talking with me was a part of that. But it's difficult to say, yeah, I converted them. It's tricky to convert students at BYU because the institution will suspend them or expel them if they leave the church. So we did have students who wanted to come to the church coming for a Bible study, but they wanted to finish their degrees and didn't want to have to go somewhere else, so they were staying in the church until they left. But I had times when I was really stressed out and frustrated. I had a roommate who was so annoying, and she was a freshman. She got stuck with me. And I heard that in the bad apartments at BYU, that if you were sleeping with your boyfriend, you would hang a string of beads on the doorknob to signify when you're busy and your roommate shouldn't enter. So I took a string of beads and I put it on my doorknob in hopes that she would leave me alone and not come into the she still came in. But I just enjoyed being there. And there were definitely things that frustrated me, and by the end I was probably ready to leave. I have fond memories of the school, and I've never been much of a BYU basher, so.
How many of you guys are BYU graduates? Tom, you're a big BYU fan, aren't you?
Yeah, no, it's audio, sorry. No.
Tim, you surely did yours as War of the Y, right?
No. UNLV.
Glenn, you're a graduate.
I am, yes.
So Glenn, Zilpha, myself, and then Bridget and the rest of you, we came all on to put the word school on. I don't know what to say. All right, what else?
This is from each point of view. At the beginning, we kind of had a mix-up of some thought Black was in the 12. What day, what year do each one of you think Black will become a member of the 12?
December 31st, 2015.
It's going to shock the world.
It's currently in the 70s, right? Gentlemen, Africa in the 70s?
Kenya.
I'm going to cheat and say, leave it conditionally to say that when there's enough political pressure for it to happen. It worked in 1978 that way, so... I guess that's how it'll work. Well,
we still barely get them that didn't grow up in Utah, right? I mean, you know, going all the way to Africa, they've got to get to the Midwest first. I think it's a long way to go.
I think in the next 30, 40 years, or Christ comes. That's one of the other.
Huh?
I think a woman will be an apostle before a black man.
I think you're probably right. Did you answer that one? What was your answer? I wasn't listening.
Soon.
Oh, soon. Come on.
No, I mean, probably within 5 years.
5 years? But there's going to be a Hispanic first, right? I mean, half the church is Hispanic right now, isn't it?
On paper.
What?
On paper.
The church hates being seen as doing anything out of pressure. So it's not that there has to be enough pressure, it's that time has to have gone on long enough that it looks like they did it, and it was totally bad told it wasn't done to try and throw a bone to people who complain about race in the church. So I think it's still, my own opinion is, it's still a little ways off. It's got to be at least a couple of Blacks in the 70s. They usually pull them from the 70s, they can't just tell
Now, Bridget, I used to think that too until I found out about Stanford. You guys all know about Stanford, right? So, you know, everybody, Stanford, everybody's forgotten about Stanford. The school, right? So it was the 70s, and, you know, the blacks weren't allowed to do anything and all that. Stanford refused to play BYU. What year? It was about 75 or 76. It was right before they reversed the ban. Of course, you know, a lot of the press dialogue, they all talk about Brazil, which is a big problem. But Stanford made it real, because they kicked them where it counted. They kicked them in the sporting program. And if BYU couldn't compete, it looked like other schools were going to follow right along. So you want to give credit to the 1978 revelation. Call up Stanford. I think that's a good point.
So did the 12 apostles play any kind of contact sports that
would help you? Well, you know, the University of Utah band, BYU, there's tears been shed, right? Here in Zion.
Depends on the county you're in. I don't think I'm crying about it.
How can you be a University of Utah fan in Utah County? I thought that was allowed.
I guess it's like women and degrees do it. That was good to be.
All right. What's your next question?
From the panel, do you remember any embarrassing moments at John where you screwed up while you're taping?
No, those have all been edited out.
Actually, I think the most embarrassing thing during recording is my repeated drop off on Skype. So
that's what I was
going to
say.
Maybe
I didn't want
to
make you feel
bad. It was Jim that unplugged the laptops a few minutes ago.
So, I don't know if we met for the first time. I met in person Tom about 2 years ago. But Tom, Glenn, and I met, you know, face-to-face really 2 days ago, and the rest of us met yesterday. We went out to dinner. So we've always done it by Skype. We're all over the country. We don't see each other. So that presents some technological challenges. If you listen to the podcast, sometimes it's loud, sometimes it's soft. It's because I can't control for the different sound levels. So if somebody's got a bad system, then that's what happens. We had the podcast with Mr. Deity, and Jim was screwing that thing. He was dropping. And as a prop to Mr. Deity, you know, he's an actor, so he's a professional. He would stop talking, and then I would say, "Okay, Jim's back on." He'd pick up right where he was. And if you listen to the podcast, you probably listen close to pick it up, but we dropped probably 20 times during that podcast where we had to redial and redial and redial.
Jim is such a pain in the...
So that's one of the technical challenges.
But that's part of the reason I think why Jim hasn't been on as much recently. I mean, he always drops. Is that part of the reason? Because it's frustrating?
No, I actually moved to Zion. So
just been busy.
I've been busy.
I'm one of those people that has been following Proposition 8 and has tried to educate and inform myself about the particulars and the methodology of that whole situation and event. And recently my husband and I watched the Prop 8 movie that came out, Equality for Some, I believe. So I'm looking for those people that can respond, some sort of narrative and opinion on the whole Prop 8 issue.
Marty? It's a difficult thing to build an argument without basing it on faith against the homosexuality issue. I mean, anybody that's a member of the church understands that the ultimate goal is to be like Christ and our Father in heaven, who are married and have children. And so it's impossible to seek exaltation in a homosexual marriage. Now, aside from that, on a social issue, I think socially... I know the sodomy laws were on the books until 2003.
They were returned 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that is based on the fact that the VHS and internet allowed pornography to flood homes, breaking down people's barriers against things that are vulgar. And
there's no link between pornography and homosexuality. sexuality might.
What I'm saying is, it wears down people's, what's the word I'm looking for?
Inhibitions.
Inhibitions.
Maybe you can watch gay.
What I'm saying is, you have desensitized, thank you, that's the word I'm looking for. Now, desensitized societies.
I mean, to speak to what you're saying about laws, I mean, there were laws against interracial marriage, you know, on the books as well. Does that mean that we should go back?
That's a separate issue.
Why is that a separate issue?
Race and homosexuality are two completely different things.
But it's limiting the power of marriage by the government for something that, for both, you know, cases, should not be outlawed.
It's a tough thing to take religion out of it, to base it on.
But interracial marriage and Prop 8 were both religious issues, especially within Mormonism.
See, with the Mormonism, since the priesthood ban is still in effect, but I know as society, it's you've seen a degeneration of people's values because of what pornography that's happened since they've been able to take them into their homes and do a dispute secret instead of running a peep show.
Now, I want to point out, some people say Mike is crazy, but the answer that he just gave is the answer you would hear in virtually every chapel across the country, right? Well, Mike doesn't go out on a limb, and I appreciate the Mike because it's willing to come here among all you heathens. And that takes a lot of courage to say something like that, facing down all the these guys alone. So you know, I come to defense of Mike because Mike pretty well lays that. Sometimes he's a little bit wacky, but normally he gives the right answer. He passed the test, so. Anybody else want to take on Prop 8?
I've got a follow-up. So, where did all the homosexuals and fornicators and adulterers come from before VHS tapes and the internet?
The fetish has always existed. There's never been a time that there wasn't a fetish. But what's happened is you have a large proliferation of people now having the idea of it made available to them where the idea wasn't available to them before.
Where then the people who had the idea, where'd they get the idea?
Well, you got people having sex
in the homosexuality wasn't invented in 1984.
No, it's been around since the dawn of man. I mean, there's no doubt people in Cain's time, among his people, practiced it.
And so what does the VHS and YouTube have to do?
Because now it's far more widespread than it previously was.
And there's more gay now?
Yes.
Proportional?
Yes, because that is an option made available to people as a lifestyle choice now, where previously it was not.
Where is the history?
I'm just observation.
But you've observed that there's proportionally more homosexuals now than for the rest of human civilization.
How often did homosexuality come up as a topic of conversation when you were 12?
When you could be hauled off to prison or... I mean, are you kidding me? Like, this is the same kind of question. Like, why didn't people bring up the possibility that maybe the church in Rome was up to shenanigans back when they ran the show? Of course, homosexuality was suppressed. Of course, they didn't talk about it for a very long
time. I'm just talking about in your local neighborhood where you live now, where you grew up.
Well, I live over in the Marmalade, so that's a cool one.
Obviously, Prop 8 is a tough issue, and that's one of the reasons we haven't actually done it. When we first started the podcast, Prop 8 was just really burning hot, and we decided we didn't want to talk about it. And it's a tough issue. I'm pretty liberal on it, but you know, to be frank, I've read a lot of stuff on sex, and there's not we don't have the research that we need. I don't necessarily believe that, you know, pornography, I'm talking just about myself, I don't believe that pornography causes a homosexuality, because by all accounts, like, we're awash in pornography, right? I mean, it's just everywhere, all the time, and if it really was causing this kind of problems that the right says it is, you know, we'd just have mayhem in the streets, and that's not happening, but I think the research needs to be...
All I'm saying is lifestyle options are more of a conversation than they were 30 years ago.
I think that's a decent point.
How do you respond to people like when you're saying that it's an option, that they themselves don't feel like an option, and
they themselves have tried to suppress their same-sex attraction, and they can't quite suppress it.
I don't know. I know Zilpa's interview with the podcast that was really interesting to listen to. I know on my mission, I met a gay man, and as we talked in the discussions, the makeup went away, and the Daisy Duke pants went away, and by the time we left the area, he was wearing a suit and less than a sack.
My friend never wore makeup or Daisy Duke. Well, I mean, that does not make the person gay.
No. I don't know. I've just got a bishop, so I'm going to call him this way.
All right, let's move on.
I really enjoy the podcast a lot. I wasn't able to convince my husband who's out of the church to come because he was worried that this is going to be an anti-Mormon fest. He was also concerned that if he came, it might get back to the word that he was here and that might affect his temple or anything. I really enjoy the podcast. I hope that we have some more town members that, you know, Mike is an interesting person to have on there, but he's completely different from my husband. My husband's not like a nom or anything, but I feel like proportionally it doesn't really represent the average church member. Because, like, my husband, I don't know, the discussion on the gay people, I say there's a lot more gay people. I think that is there's more closeted gays. I don't think that there are more gays. You know, I have three kids with Asperger's syndrome. They're in the autism spectrum. And they say, oh, you know, autism has increased by 800%. It's not. It's just more diagnosable, you know, and to say that, you know, homosexuality is a lifestyle choice, so many kids that have purpose is a lifestyle choice. You know, I think that you want to keep these people in closets or just call them big dorks, you know, maybe, you know, back 20, 30 years ago, somebody with Asperger's would have just been like, eek, you know, and they wouldn't have been diagnosed with anything. But I think our society is learning how to accept people and their differences, and I don't see how that is against the teachings of Christ. So I'm very baffled by the anti-gay attitude. You know, Christ was the one that hung out with whores, you know, and tax collectors. So why do you think that that's how you run his church, by, you know, taking away your civil rights? I just...
we try to... I'm obviously biased. I mean, you can't accuse me of not being biased, but we try to run the gamut as much as we can, but we run the spectrum. But most your standard average Mormons, and I would include myself in this, say, 15, 20 years ago, are unable to engage their own faith in a sort of intelligent, detached way. It is extremely difficult to find anybody who can understand what we're talking about. That, you know, they can hear the first what a couple sentences, and they just turn it off. I mean, I cannot get my parents to even understand what we're doing. It just completely baffles them. And the question I get more than anything is, why do you care about Mormonism? You know, you left the church. Why do you care? So I want those people, and I will give deference to anybody who is a believer. But it's extremely difficult to get those sort of standard people to come on. That's why somebody like Mike is important. Because he's so rare, a person who will engage, who will gain God. Glenn still goes to church. Tom still goes to church. And Bridget goes to church every other week, right?
I go to the LDS church once.
Right, you guys sort of have a sharing. Oh.
Yeah, he comes to my church once a month. Right.
So, I mean, we still try to stay, and I drive by the church every day on the way to work. But yeah, I'm on the lookout all the time, and I would like to engage more on the LDS side. And unfortunately, you know, they've ceded that whole territory to me. And to others of my ilk, right? Because they don't want to come in. So you know, right now there's John DeLynn's podcast and my podcast, and there's Sunstone and Dialogue and those sort of things. But the numbers are few, and if you count the number of Mormons, the number of ex-Mormons, why is this big middle missing? What's going on? And we need to fix that in my mind. But they got to. Something's got to change, and I don't know, maybe we change.
I can tell you one thing that that might help a little bit with getting believing Mormon guests and faithful Mormon guests on the show is a lot of times we have faithful LDS guests on the show and they get really critical comments on their podcasts. And it's really, really hard for them to want to come and do the show when they see the other guests who have been on the show. Now, they're treated well by the host, but when they see that they've so thrashed their comments, we don't moderate the comments at all. That's kind of a turn off. I got some feedback on the apologetics podcast to that effect. And, I'm just saying it's okay for you to be critical of guests, but I try to be polite about it and it's not too sarcastic because it makes it harder for us to get more guests if they get a lot of really hostile feedback.
Yeah, so it's your fault.
Yeah, just simple question, just for my curiosity. How many hours a week do you guys spend outside of the podcast working on the podcast?
Each podcast takes me between 5 to 10 hours. So if you send me an email, I ignore it. That's because I'm ignoring it. I'm probably not wanting to deal with the podcast at that point. It usually takes a couple hours to arrange the guest, and then it takes a couple hours to edit it and publish it. It's you know, I say I spend less time on the podcast than I did going to church. So,
what about you guys?
It depends on the amount of studying we have to do on the topic. If it's an easy topic, we can wing it. If it's a difficult one, you know, you have to do a lot of research and study so you have a clue what you're talking about.
Yeah, most of the for dummy ones, those are the ones that take most research because they're talking about historical doctrines. Read them and dig into them and figure out what they're all about.
Yeah, setting up guests probably takes a lot of the time. It seems like once you do it and get it done, that's like the easiest part. It's the before, and then the editing and publishing, all that stuff's a little bit tricky. Yeah.
What takes me the most time, Sergeant, is hiding the microphones at John and Zilpha's house where they can't see them so that I can get the after discussion.
Glenn always records whatever we're doing. So, and he pops up with these little things. So he'll be running the tape the whole time. And so, you know, we might say things that are
irreverent,
yes. Well, that's what he's referring to.
You gotta leave that stuff in. That's priceless.
Well, the problem is, Glenn really loves it. He loves the after stuff. But the problem is, if I know somebody's recording it, I'm not gonna speak as frankly, right?
That's why I hide the microphone.
Yeah, but now we're always suspicious of you.
I know.
Also, if there's too much swearing, it's rated R, and then you have the same problem with all the believing Mormons you get.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we
do bleep most of the.
Yeah, we.
Nice stuff.
We bleep a lot, but you know, the rated R movies sell just as well in Utah as they do anywhere else. So I don't want to buy the swearing thing. All right.
This goes to the root of what I think is some of the reason that a lot of us go through a long, difficult struggle when we start to have questions. And this is a quote from President Hinckley, and I'd like to get you guys' feelings about it. And, that I think we hear things like it constantly, and I think it really hurts a lot of people in family relationships. And this is a quote that he quoted his wise father, who would say, "Cynics do not contribute, skeptics do not create, doubters do not achieve." I think that's the opposite, personally, but I want to think that's the point.
Yeah, I mean, you look at comments like that, you look at the recent conference talk where, you know, we're told that we have to crawl past the Book of Mormon in order to leave the church. And you realize that Mormons looking at those from inside the church, at those who are outside the church, don't know what we've been through, don't know what it takes to get out of the church. And they don't know what kind of prison that you're trapped in, because it's a prison that's in here, it's in your mind, and you need to step out of that. And there's no, this goes to the kind of the stuff that we've talked about sometimes on the podcast, which is they have a very difficult time relating to us. And whether it's my mother, or whether it's my grandmother, or whether it's Hinckley, or, you know, the bishop stopping by to drop by, you know, they don't get it. They just don't get it. It is really what it comes down to. It's their world, and we stepped outside of it.
I just want to add to that, if Joseph Smith hadn't been somewhat skeptical and doubted somewhat what he heard and gone to inquire of the Lord, according to the story, we wouldn't be here, would we? I don't know if that carries any weight with regards to Hinckley or not, but
I just want to say, as a church leader speaking to the church as a whole, you know, it's not like a coach of a team saying, you know, just try a little harder. You know, they've got to give the pep talk in the locker room saying, go all the way and do your very best.
No, it's more like a CEO talking to his stockholders.
You know, I think at times like conference or news reports, they're gonna tell people, go all the way and do your best and don't fall behind. And you know what I'm saying? There are times when they just they,
so I think that's something we hear every week in church in some form or another. I'm afraid that's my problem with it.
Well, like you said, it is hard to find the middle ground to have these types of conversations when the leadership just says, everybody do your best and go all the way. You know what I'm saying?
I think Mormonism is a faith of skepticism. I mean, for most of us, or a lot of us who left the church, it wasn't a big leap to become, say, an atheist or a skeptic. We were already trained that way from our youth. The way Mormonism looks at other faiths, it just has a problem reflexively looking that way at itself. You know, so I think, you know, I got a great education at BYU. I think Mormons are good thinkers. They're solid thinkers. They just have this one blind spot, right? And so I think that a lot of Mormons, except when it comes to, you know, like Tahitian Nami or stuff like that, I guess. But other than that, I mean, you know, you go to BYU and the guys in the biology department, the anthropology department, they function well in those departments. It's just that inside thing. Probably you'd find that in other religions too. So I think the skepticism there is, and it can be healthy. But why is it that we can't look at others and say, well, that's not so bad? You know, that skeptics have been a healthy thing for society. You know, since the Renaissance. I don't know.
Well, a lot of scholars here are that have been to college. You're trained in college to analyze something with suspicion and doubt. Whereas, you know, a place like BYU teaches you to analyze something with faith and hope. And that can be a tough way to thing to cross over.
Not necessarily college of training you to be skeptical and to become doubtful in certain things. I mean, I didn't plan on it. I'm doubting. You know, and this wasn't something I wanted to do. As a matter of fact, I resisted it all the way. And I still find times when I have doubts about my doubts, you know, and this is a circular thing. And it's not an easy thing. That's and just to build up what Jim said. It's not really a choice. It's more of an avoiding the inevitable. And it's not cool, and it's not fun. And when you hear statements like that from people here or from your local leaders, it hurts.
Bring my blind spot over here and bravely ask you a question. I'm an active believing member of the church, and I want to go spend everybody money to protect you. But I had some guy over there, my husband, and he left the church a couple of years ago, and there's certain topics about the church that are kind of just buttons. And so I'm kind of wondering from you guys, whoever would like to answer, What not necessarily the hot topics are with you, but more what are the more interesting facets about the church that are fascinating to you or that you're passionate about? What those topics are?
Non-Metals Massacre.
You mean in a positive way or a negative way?
I would say the most fascinating thing to me is the integration of Mormonism and business acumen. That's and that, you know, faith in the church to some, you know, some or most Mormons, I'm not going to say all, you know, relates to business acumen as well. And, you know, success in business means that you are also a, you know, a good Mormon as well. And, you know, I think that's unique to America. I might be wrong about that, you know. But, you know, this integration between theology and capitalism, the you know, is exemplified in Mormonism. I would say that's probably one of the things that fascinates me about Mormonism still to this day.
The thing that really catches my interest and keeps me interested in Mormonism is reading the historical source documents, especially, and comparing what I was taught with what was going on in the early days, and I just can't quite get enough of that comparison and how different it is, and especially the kind of crazy. Not, they wouldn't have thought it was crazy. To them, it was pure religion, and it was glorious. But to me, there's a lot of crazy things that were going on at the time, and I just think they're fascinating.
I think the one most fascinating to me is that Mormonism is a new religious movement. It's still in the infancy. We don't know what it's going to become, and it's very exciting to me to be an inside outsider, I guess you could say, watching this religion develop. I mean, I think of what it would have been like to go back to that second, third century Christianity and watch how Christianity was changing, developed a lot in its first four centuries. The LDS Church is going to change and develop a lot, and it's just fascinating for me to be a part of it, to be a kind of outsider part of the religious community.
I like the idea of eternal progression. And that in the LDS cosmology, the afterlife, there's really not hell. And I think that we don't really implement these ideas very well, because it, to me, really is a message of hope, and that we shouldn't judge people. But instead, it kind of turns into, like, people will say, oh, that's a celestial person, or, oh, that's a terrestrial person, as if it's something bad, instead of saying, you know, it's all good. But I find hope in that kind of afterlife, whether it's real or not, I don't know. But I like that part of the church's teaching.
I personally like to just study the doctrines of the church and see how they all link together and tie together and how they support one another. You know, you look at the Abrahamic covenant, then you look at the order of the priesthood and the oath and covenant of the priesthood and how the Holy Ghost fits into that and how people grow and develop. And I just love looking at how the doctrines link together and build upon one another as you study the various doctrines.
For me, I guess it's just why. The whole thing is so bizarre, you know. It's just, you just keep peeling it away. It gets stranger and stranger and stranger, and then it becomes compelling, you know. And you just keep reading, and that, you know. I remember, you know, I have to go to the priesthood session now because nobody else will. I remember as a young boy being so scared and guilty when I saw that session. And then I remember the young man being so angry. It just pissed me off what they were saying. And now I'm just so amused. I was saying, praise to the man. And I knew it was page 27. And I got up, and I sang with gusto again, which I haven't done in a while. And it was just, because to me, they're guys trying their best. You know, I hated a Packer. I couldn't stand it, but now I understand exactly what he's saying. I mean, he's an asexual. He doesn't understand what the rest of us are doing. That's fascinating. So why wouldn't you be interested in it? And you know, it's like every once in a while sit down and make a list of topics for podcasts. You can do that from here until eternity, come up with topic after topic after topic. It's endlessly fascinating. So I guess that's why. All right.
Ken? Okay, this is going to be a multi-part quick question. I just wanted to ask each panelist, what's your personal favorite podcast they recorded? Personally, my favorite was Zilpha's interview with her gay friend. Second part to that, what topics are coming up for the Four Dummies series?
instructions.
Okay.
The one I usually recommend to others is the Word of Wisdom one. I have a fun one.
My favorite is the Novel Expositor. That was one of the first ones that I heard. It's just
I like the feedback ones because it's a chance for us to play verbal grab ass. So they're fun. I like them more.
Well, I'm obviously biased, but I really like Bill Bagley and Gene Sessions. And I kind of like the personal interviews of some of the people that we've had on.
I really like the Bill Bagley one, too. And I also like not so much to listen to it, but to participate in the Civil War prophecy because I had never researched that before, and trying to find the source material, and especially newspapers from the time, was just really interesting to do the research for it.
And Bridget's favorite is my interview with Cabo.
I don't really like any of them. So, probably my favorite that I did was the interview with Anders Eidsheck, the guy who was studying Glenn Beck. And we had a lot of we talked about an hour after that. So he's asking me all these questions about Mormonism. Trying to figure out, but probably my favorite would be Will Bagley.
What would be my favorite?
What's coming up? Our next dummies one. We can only schedule about once a month. We have to study. The next dummies is the Church Handbook of Instruction for Dummies, and followed by Saturday's Warrior for Dummies. So maybe in our last couple minutes, what do you want to see? What do you want us to talk about? Anything you're screaming about? Obviously, Mountain Meadows.
Contest you had?
The essays?
Yeah, the essays.
Yeah, the essays. I was worried about that. We started pimping that like way back in March. But I think it turned out all right. I mean, well, I put them all out there for everybody who entered. So we were joking around. We might do. Y'all remember the Nibley challenge that people couldn't write. Scripture. I think we're going to have a scripture chapter writing contest.
So, if it turns out that it's all true, Mike, will you come and visit us in the terrestrial kingdom?
I got prefaces by saying that you asked, right?
I asked, yeah.
When the LDS Church tried to distance itself from its polygamous heritage, it frequently cites the date 1890, and Gordon Hinckley, in the September 8, 1998 interview with Larry King, even chided the public for mistakenly associating the LDS Church with polygamy. And interestingly, not very far from this very spot, Howard Hunter is buried with his eternal brides on either side of him. And Gordon Hinckley is the one who performed that ceremony in 1990. And Gordon Hinckley's other comment, among many in the King interview, was that the LDS Church has nothing whatever to do with polygamy and that it's not doctrinal. So my question is, if it's not doctrinal, then why did Gordon Hinckley perform it as an ordinance in 1990? And why does this go right over people's heads? Or at least that's my perception, that it's gone right over most people's heads. And how could Gordon Hinckley think that he would get away with this?
Well, there's a lot in there, ain't there? That's probably the reason we haven't talked about it much.
I was just saying, that's the suggestion for the
podcast. But I mean, polygamies are difficult ones to attack, you know, because we're trying to do it in an hour.
And
well, one problem is that, at least the way I was taught, that polygamy is still the true principle. And Gordon Hinckley, when he said that to the world, he wasn't, I think he just didn't want to kind of let the cat out of the bag that we still do believe in it.
He was a man.
He was speaking as a man for that.
We have on the agenda to take apart just Hinckley's public statement. There's several of them, and they're very fascinating in and of themselves. But obviously, polygamy and Mormonism, you may go on that all day.
There's something that I would be interested in listening to. There was an article circulating around the internet just the past couple of weeks having to do with the fact that Mormonism, the culture itself, is spiritually dead. The correlation has somehow killed the spirit within the church. I'd be interested in seeing that topic.
Correlation? The address correlation?
Yes.
Yeah, that's...
I wouldn't say the correlation killed it. I'd say the internet killed it.
Killed what?
Killed the spirit of the church.
Oh.
Regardless, I'd like to see that fleshed out a little bit. Just talking about how the culture of Mormonism has changed from its infancy stages to where it's now quite...
Yeah, correlation is fascinating, but it's bigger, and ex-Mormons tend to oversimplify it. But it's fascinating. One of those, once again, where do we even start? It would be a fascinating one.
I think you've touched a bit on this in some of your previous podcasts, but it's just something that I would love to hear more about. It's a very interesting process having your worldview opened up. It feels very freeing, very exhilarating. But at the same time, I think you lose a little bit, at least. I've seen this in my view. It feels a little deflating, too. One of the things you lose is one of the things that I love best about the LDS Church, and that is the sense of community and the drive and the passion for all striving together. And so some of your guests kind of talked about, well, what... And where do we go from here? What's the way to focus that drive or to regain that? I mean, you have all these ideas about, well, now kind of the world is out there, and you research everything and learn and try to do the best I can in my life, but how do we keep from just sitting at home watching golf on Sunday instead?
That's a great comment, maybe one that I want to sort of end on. I was sitting around drinking with a bunch of ex-Mormons a couple of weeks ago. And I realized that, except that we were all drinking, we were doing exactly the same sort of things that we did. We were the same people, right? We've been out here for a couple of weeks, and our cat couldn't come with us, of course. So our cat is with another ex-Mormon family. It's the same community outside the church that's inside the church. And one thing we hope, I know we say many offensive things on the podcast, and I know that most members wouldn't be comfortable, and I admire all of you who came tonight, because that takes a lot of guts. But we're if there's any one thing that I'm after, is that we're all still one family, and I don't know when they're going to get it through their heads down in Salt Lake that they've got to stop doing what they're doing in terms of alienation. And that goes for the ex-Mormons too. We've got to somehow try to figure out how to get along, because we're all the same people. My ancestors, my heritage, who I am, I'm Mormon. And the fact that I think it's all a bunch of bullshit doesn't matter, right? Because that's my family, that's my heritage. And how are we going to start bridging that divide and starting to get along? Because it doesn't make any sense. When, we're out in North Carolina, there's a lot of different religions. Nobody can understand when I try to explain to them the Mormon, ex-Mormon phenomenon, because it doesn't exist in most religions. If you're a cross-dressing, whatever, Catholic, you're still Catholic. Nobody questions that. And how do we choke that one off? That's what I want.
I can remember a lot of animosity. I mean, I know a few years ago I said some horrible things to Jim on the internet. I needed to repent of.
Well, I turned it into papers.
But one of the things they mentioned when they talk about the temple is that it's a rock, and it's a place to stand to view the world from that's solid. And the shifting sand essay was a very good one, because when you step off the rock, you're shifting, you're moving, you don't have a firm, solid foundation anymore. And that's one of the things that the church offers, and that people feel a little lost from when they leave the church, they lost that rock. But to go on the latter part of Gina's question she had earlier, yes, we still love people that leave the church. We love homosexuals. We don't like the act. Because in the Mormon worldview, there are laws that you enter into, and these laws, as you adhere to them, you get on that wavelength, the same wavelength that Father Devin's on, and you get that Holy Ghost that keeps you on that rock and allows you to view the things without being lost in the chaos. Am I right?
I'm going to co-op what you're saying. I do think the church is growing up. I mean, there's signs out there that they're starting, there's cracks. You know, in 1978, of course, the church blacks the priesthood. And what happened the second after? Everybody said, great! The homosexual problem is a problem for the church. They can't do that. So it's going to cause them to grow up. And it's probably not going to happen as fast as we want it to, but I think the church is coming along. There's some great people in the church, Brother Jensen in the historical department, and there's some others. So there is hope out there. Some people are about to die. I hope that we don't. Everybody's going to go through their angry phase, and that's okay. Hopefully, maybe the podcast can help with that. But hopefully, we can all sort of transition. And I'm starting to annoy myself. So, any last word before we shut the mics off?
Thank you for coming. This has been fun. I think everybody here sitting here shares the same idea. John puts a lot of time into this. He puts a lot of heart and a lot of his energy into this. So, I mean, that hour that you hear is quite a bit of John's work. And I just want to thank him for inviting me to participate in this wonderful activity. So, I mean,
but you all got to see it live, so thanks for coming. We've got the room until 10. I'm going to head over to Gracie's afterwards. If anybody wants to join us at about 10 o'clock down at the bar, other than that, you're free to say what you want. We'll turn off the mic.
So there you have it. So that wasn't too bad, was it? Anyway, just wanted to send out a big shout out and thanks to John and Zilpha for being such wonderful hosts, all the panelists that came from far and wide, and all you wonderful fans that showed up and came and supported. And it was so great to put some names to faces and to kind of get past all of this online persona stuff. It was really, really fun, and I hope that all you guys had an enjoyable experience and were able to enjoy it with us. So, we really do have some pretty awesome fans for Mormon Expression, so I just want to say thanks again.